You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 18th, 2016. It's Not Safe for Work.
Recorded live from the newly opened United Methodist Mosque of Springfield, Illinois, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Chris Kobach. However you say your name. How does he say his name? Chris Kobach?
Chris K. Kobach. I think it's just KKK. KKK? I think that's just for short.
This United Methodist woman wants you to come over and register me, bitch.
That's right. Don't make
United
her mad,
Methodist
Chris.
Mosque.
Don't make her.
Yeah. Mom of the United Methodist Mosque of Springfield, and you can come down and register me and all my other immigrant
Methodist,
friends.
Methodist Muslim friends. Yeah, I should really come out as I haven't ever mentioned this before on the podcast because anonymity is important to me. But I am a gay. Immigrant LGBT Muslim,
yeah,
who's also a Methodist usher
seeking an abortion.
Yeah, so whatever registry you're opening up, I want to line up and be there first.
What did Billy Bragg say? If you got a blacklist, I want to be on it.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely,
right.
I top of the list, baby. Top of the list.
And thanks to everyone, and I mean everyone, who has kind of band together and said what needs to be said this week, starting with John Oliver, who pointed out the best thing I thought that he pointed out was that those of us who are quote unquote immune from what Trump might try to do are the ones that are really responsible for getting ahead of this and fighting it.
Yeah.
And, he gave a list of organizations, which, by the way, all of these organizations are just being flooded with donations and volunteers. The head of the ACLU was on Rachel Maddow Wednesday night saying, you know, I've got more right at this moment. I have more volunteers than I know what to do with, but I'm going to put them all to work.
There's always brass to be polished somewhere.
Right. Well, or you know, there's canvassing to be done. There's
absolutely
lots to be done. And he said there's states in states like Mississippi, in states where we never thought, you know, to win an election, or we never thought to win anything. Now people are saying, no, we need to come out and make a stand. So this podcast is first of all to say thank you to all of you. Those of you that contacted me about my mom, those that contacted us about the election, those that wrote just to say thank you for keeping me sane, or thank you, I couldn't listen to you for the first few days because I was paralyzed. All of you matter to us very much. And we're so grateful to hear from you. And we got contributions and we got support and we heard wailing and, you know, both of us are also just climbing out of this. So we're going to do it together, fists in the air, ready to fight. Mm-hmm. And I just am so grateful that we aren't in this alone.
And that we have the technology to talk to each other.
Right. We have a lot of tools at our disposal that people, for instance, during the McCarthy hearings didn't have.
Right, to know that you're not alone.
Right. For instance, during the Japanese internment that we didn't have during World War II, we didn't have a lot of opportunities to share and bind together and work together that we have now.
Yep.
So all is not hopeless, and that's my kind of keystone for today. Mm-hmm. I want to start with Bible Bitch, if you don't mind.
Absolutely not.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural.
The day after the election, Junior Dude and I went to a church service at the United Methodist Mosque of Springfield. Mm-hmm. And I say that partially joking, but also because our church, which is a United Methodist church, held a post-election sort of unity service, and it was an interdenominational service that included mm-hmm. Muslims.
Yep.
And so we attended a church service that was interdenominational and included Muslims and included Catholic nuns and included Jews and all kinds of different Christian denominations, African American denominations. And it was organized by a group within several groups, but the group within our United Methodist Church is called the Peacekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a bunch of hippies. I'm sorry. They just are. We love them. Yeah. And they didn't know. I mean, this was I think the intention of this when they planned it 10 days before the election was we need to reunite as a country under Hillary Clinton. You know, I think that's what they were thinking was let's show compassion for everyone and really try to bring the country together and pray for that. And that was what was going to happen, right? Well, needless to say, a funny thing happened on the way to that church service. And in the course of the results coming out, you know, at 2 a.m. and the next day, interest in this church service exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And Junior Dude and I went to the service, and there were a lot of people there. I thought it was very well attended. I wanted to say too that it has been really hard for Junior Dude this week. This is his first election.
Mm-hmm.
The first election where he's
voting.
Hell
of a first election.
Yeah. The first election where he's voted.
Yeah.
And he was an election judge. I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm for politics and elections and world politics and et cetera. This is his obsessive interest. And so he's committed, and he committed an entire day. Election day, he was up at 4 a.m. and went, checked in with a polling place at 5 a.m. This is an 18-year-old guy who went mm-hmm. at 5 a.m. and stayed until 8:30 at night helping people vote.
Mm-hmm.
And to have then this result was, you know, that's really hard. He will never forget this. I keep telling them, you know, you're the future and you will never forget what happened. And, you know, that's something that your generation has to carry with it forever and forget.
He and his friends, mm-hmm. Being typical teenage boys mm-hmm. or young men,
mm-hmm.
Are also cross-pollinated with a lot of comic book and video
mm-hmm.
Tropes,
mm-hmm.
like good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
eventually the bad guys lose, right? I mean, that's the whole point of the game is eventually you overcome the bad guys.
Yeah.
And this is an election where, no, the bad guys won this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons that are sketchy and wrong and that we will talk about
and
later.
Yeah, just not even clear at this point whether, you know, because the good guy did win. The good lady did win.
Yeah, she
won. She won the popular vote. So mm-hmm. by a lot.
But it's been very hard on him because he does. It's not that he's foolish.
No.
It's just that this is his first rodeo.
Yep. Yep.
And
falling off that horse for the first time when you think you're going to be the hero of the story.
Yeah, it's really hard.
So interestingly enough, one of the Bible verses that was read, and a lot of things were read, not just Bible, but there were a lot of things discussed. But mm-hmm. the one that stuck with me and will stick with me forever because of it was a moment with my son was they read Isaiah 41, verse 10, which is a verse that I memorized in Sunday school as a child,
mm-hmm.
and it is one that is often memorized. If you're a former Sunday school student, you know this one. And I said, Junior Dude, you know, this is one of my favorite Bible verses. I learned this one as a child, and I handed him the bulletin from the meeting, and pointed to it, and he read it, and he started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
So, without crying.
So you all are not alone.
You all are not alone. But the interesting thing about this verse is it doesn't promise, is what it does promise and what it doesn't promise. And so I'm going to read it I'm going to read it first from the 1599 Geneva Bible, and then I'm going to read it from the King James Version, which is from the 1600s, and then I'm going to read it from the Message, which is, 21st century, 21st century Bible. Okay.
It's the hippie Bible.
It's the hippie Bible. Okay, 1599. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not afraid, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee and help thee and will sustain thee with the right hand of my justice. And King James Version, which is 1600s, and I can say this with my eyes closed.
Sure.
Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Modern version is Don't Panic.
Douglas Adams version.
Douglas Adams speaking to us from
beyond.
The beyond, right.
The big friendly letters.
In
don't
big friendly
panic.
Letters, don't panic. Don't panic, I'm with you. There's no need to fear, for I'm your God. I'll give you strength. I'll help you. I'll hold you steady. Keep a firm grip on you. What this verse promises is that we're not alone. It doesn't promise that the fight is over. It doesn't promise that it'll be easy. It doesn't promise that you will not have struggles and trials and difficulties and agonies and be paralyzed and be scared. It promises that you're not alone. That's all it promises. And that's, but from that point, we go forward. And I am very grateful for the example of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
She has had to be strong for all of us. And I cannot imagine how hard it is.
No.
You're going to have to talk for a minute.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
I can sling that bullshit with the best of them. See, this is where it gets difficult, because in my notes, I jump to the part where don't rely on God in heaven.
Yeah.
But not,
well, I guess,
not in that sense.
Right.
Not in that sense. It's the I just made a list of the things that piss me off.
Mm-hmm.
They don't piss me off because they're silly or they're foolish or they're misplaced necessarily, but it's here are things that I really wish these are within our power to give up or to modify. Because right now we lost. We are a powerless people right now, in a sense. We have enormous power that we will talk about in a few minutes. But right now we lost. And we lost because of Russia, and we lost because of the FBI, and we lost for a lot of reasons. But mostly because 59 million Americans looked fascism dead in the eye and said, that's what I want. That's what I want. And we can't forget that. It's a very hard thing to wrap our heads around.
Yep.
But there are 50 or so plus million Americans who like the idea of a Trump presidency and love the idea of putting racists and fascists in charge of the government and love the idea of looting the treasury and making the rest of us cry.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's what we don't want to look at. We'd rather talk about the Bernie voters or the Jill Stein voters, which deserve discussion. But the primary problem we face are those, that block of really irredeemably lost souls who embrace this man and think he is their savior. So my first piece of advice is look to those who stood by you during hard times and those who did not. This is something I said last week, and I'll repeat it again. The people who stood with you during this hard time, this is the Crispin's speech.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, those who stood with me today are my brothers.
Yep. Yep.
A win or lose, whether you won or lost, you know, and victory is easy, man. Victory is sweet, and it's easy, and it's what we were promised and what we were waiting for. And now it sucks to be us.
Mm-hmm.
It just sucks to be us. But if you stood with me on this day, then you're my brother or my sister. And if you didn't, then you're not. It's pretty much that simple. Second, please give up the idea that there's some God in heaven or referee who will intercede when terrible people do terrible things. Quit pleading to an empty auditorium that surely someone will rise up and do something. You know, and everyone does it. Everyone says, oh, my God, can you imagine to Twitter or in an open letter to somebody? Can you imagine if the Democrats did atrocity thing?
Republicans
would lose their mind. Well, you're not. There's no one listening to you. Mm-hmm. There is no referee. There is no, in this context, God who is going to intercede on your behalf. The right is perfectly comfortable with their racism and their fascism. And the media is perfectly comfortable pretending that those things don't exist. So there is no way – quit talking about exposing this or
proving
it. I
guess I want to add one thing. I want to add one thing to that, Drift Glass, which is that it's not only that they're perfectly comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. There's an infectious fever that we are discovering now that I think is causing people in mainstream media to be a little more awake or perhaps rouse themselves because it's a threat to them.
Right.
And this is where I've gone over and over in the past week is when you threaten mainstream media's livelihood, self-respect, or prestige, they'd sit up and take notice.
Oh, yes.
And so this fake news story where not only did Trump arenas retweet fake stories over and over again, they continued to retweet them after they were debunked. They continued to believe them after it was disproven, even to the point where the person that published the story said, no, I was faking in order to catch you believing a lie and to make fun of you. And I admit on purpose, I did this to make you look like an idiot. And you do. You look like an idiot. No, it's true. No. Obama did pay protesters to come out after Election Day and start fires and chant. And no, you don't understand. I published that so that I would catch you believing a lie. No, you didn't. And it really is. There is an infectious fever, a brain fever that makes certain
conservatives
who need authoritarianism, who need it to be absolutely true that George W. Bush is a good Christian man. Mm-hmm. I'm an independent. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever it is, whatever.
Well,
you might remember
the first year or so that Stephen Colbert was on the Colbert Report. A whole lot of conservatives thought it was a straight news show. Because it sounded just like Bill O'Reilly. And you had to break it to them very gently that, no, he's laughing at you. All he's done is taken all of your stupid ideas and your low IQ and your faith in authoritarianism and cranked it up one notch. And it has eluded you that you are being laughed at because you really, really are that stupid. But the thing is, this is not news to anyone on the left.
Yeah.
This is not a shock. This is not a surprise that these people are this way. They've been this way for a really long time. They've been this way. You know, we started blogging back in, you know, during the middle of the Bush administration.
Right.
And this was in full flower on public view for anyone who cared to look at it. But the problem was nobody wanted to look. So I asked, you know, one can say I said on Twitter, and it doesn't mean anything. Twitter's an open sewer that people just piss down. That's all it is. But occasionally, interesting things sort of float along the surface, and interesting people participate, and that's fine. But my question for all of the people who are now freaking out in the media, in our press, that, oh, my God, he broke his pool. He ditched his pool and went to dinner. Donald Trump did, and that is beyond the pale. My question is simply, what are the leaders, what are the bosses of your billion-dollar media companies doing right now to stand up to Donald Trump? What is Jeff Zucker doing constructively? What is Phil Griffin doing exactly? Explain it to me. Go on camera today. Be proud of it. If your boss is taking some heroic stand, the head of NBC is taking some heroic fucking stand against fascism, let's hear about it. If not, then shut up. Because you're working for a corporation. You're not you're not a journalist anymore. You're an employee. If you won't stand up, if you want someone to stand up for the free press, be the first to do it.
Be the free press.
Be the free press.
You have to be the free press before you can stand up for the free press.
And if you're not, then just be quiet. You know, talk about, airline tragedies and the weather and whatever else you want to talk about. But
baby in a well, nonstop baby in a well news. Yeah.
And talk about global warming. And that's always, that's always nice. And talk about, I don't know, whatever other issues that are important to liberals, which is great.
Global warming. They don't talk about climate change. Ever.
Well, I'm just saying. No. Yeah. I'm just saying. The two or three remaining liberal voices on television.
Yeah.
Talk about things that I'm interested in. I respect them. I think they're awesome. But I would like to know from them, as they plead the case for please stand up for the free press, I have, money in my sofa cushion that I'm going to go try to root out so I can go buy groceries.
Yeah.
Your boss is sitting on $1 billion in profit from pointing a camera at this monster.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
is he going to do about it?
Because a camera at his empty podium for hours on end.
So my question is, if your incredibly wealthy corporation that is the news won't stand up for journalism,
mm-hmm.
then what the hell do you expect from me?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, you people deserted your post. You deserve nothing. You know, if you suddenly have a come to Jesus moment and start defending your profession vigorously and passionately and without this both sides bullshit and start pointing fingers and naming names at people in your profession who are collaborators, who are quislings, who deserve our contempt because they're going along with the program, great. But if you don't do that, if you're quietly waiting for someone else to do that, mm-hmm. then you're not a journalist.
Yeah. Yep.
You're a collaborator. You're a nice collaborator. You know, but as I saw on Twitter this week, nice people scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Nice people who are good neighbors and great people. This is from a Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
mm-hmm.
nice and they were kind and they were sweet and we liked them but they didn't like to get involved in politics.
Yeah.
Or unpleasant things. And they were really nice right up until they dragged us away. And they turned their eyes away because they were nice people. They didn't want to get involved. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to get involved, fine. But don't call yourself a journalist and don't expect anyone to respect you because the story of your lifetime is sitting 40 feet away mm-hmm. in an mm-hmm. office that you mm-hmm. can go to. I can't go there. Phil Griffin's never going to sit down and let me interview him. Jeff Zucker's never going to let me interview him. But you work for him. I bet you he'd talk to you. So why aren't you in there asking what they're doing to defend freedom of the press?
Well, I get a really big paycheck to not do that. So that's the point. Yeah.
And as long as that's true, everything else you do is suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have the best of intentions and you really love doing it. You know, I watched this wonderful video, and I realize I'm kind of rambling a bit, but this is the Melissa Harris Perry video.
Yeah, and I want you to get into that.
Right.
I want to stop for just a second before you do that.
Please.
And
yeah.
Because you mentioned professionalism and how, professional journalists and so forth. And I really want to insert into that conversation the importance of professionalism in the office of President of the United States and lots of other offices as well. And we are seeing, we're probably not going to have a lot of time to talk about this today, but there is a smirk on Lawrence O'Donnell's face that is not going to go away for a long time because he knows how a White House is set up and he knows what happens in the United States Senate with confirmation hearings for cabinet members and how they have to submit to a background check and release their tax returns to the FBI and just how complicated this is for an administration that has a philosophy.
Right.
And a group of professionals who want to carry out that philosophy
mm-hmm.
and is willing and able to commit to the hours to put their ducks in a row and do that. And now we have an administration that has none of that.
Right.
Zero philosophy, zero willingness to put in the hours. I just read on Twitter, Trump's getting ready to do a victory lap and do new rallies and swing states to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So because he's got to have that narcissistic cheering crowd. Boy, is he going to be surprised at what greets him now that he's president.
Well, David Sanger had an interview with him in in Time magazine. And I think it also harkens back to a Chris Matthews interview talking about abortion, where it was clear that Donald Trump hadn't thought through anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when the reporter sort of fed him lines to say, you know, about the Iran nuclear deal or about abortion, well, maybe what you really mean is this, right? And he grabs it like a life preserver. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Because he's a functional illiterate who doesn't have any philosophy whatsoever.
And this is where he really is an accurate reflection of the party base.
Who are, I mean,
they might be great auto mechanics and farmers and business people. They might have a great big skill set, but these are people who have know nothing about how government works or what government does or why government's important or how it functions at all, other than they hate it. And it's run by liberals who want to take their money away.
Making liberals mad is the end result of politics.
Right.
That's all you want to do is make liberals mad. Yeah.
And they want to just hold themselves aloof from any kind of actual knowledge of how anything works so they can be judgmental assholes. And now it's, you know, it's kind of on the table. And Donald Trump sort of floundering around and lying about it. That's one thing everyone must remember. Just, you know, there's a lot of things we all have to hold on to. I suggest we get Post-it notes because my memory.
All over my memory. Well, and John Oliver said that too. This is not normal. Put a Post-it note on your fridge. This is not normal. Yeah.
Donald Trump spent the last 18 months lying every fucking time he opened his mouth.
57 times a day over 18 months.
He is not going to stop lying now at all. It worked for him. You know, lying got me into this mess. Lying's going to get me out.
Yep.
And so, everything you hear from the Trump campaign, assume it's a lie. Just assume it, because there's no reason not to. There's no reason to assume at all that the people who are reporting this stuff, the people who are being that they're slowly surrounding this campaign with sort of a slight whiff of professionalism, or at least trying to put a tie on it and put shoes on it and make it presentable to the public, are anything but the same Kellyanne Conway, Corianne Lewandowski, lying sacks of shit. That's all they are. Now they have actual power, which is terrifying. But Donald Trump is a liar. First, foremost, you know, that's what he is in the morning. That's what he is when he goes to bed at night. He's a liar. He's a congenital, pathological, egomaniacal, racist liar. So whatever comes out of his mouth, probably not true.
I want to get back to professionalism for just a moment.
Yes.
And just not have our side fall into that same trap of believing that we can get away with not demanding professionalism on our side. And I have seen it. I've seen people, and I don't know who, no one knows who anyone is on Twitter, really.
Right.
So this could be a 12-year-old girl that I'm talking to. But when I see the fight on Twitter over who's going to be DNC chair.
Yeah.
And people suggesting Michelle Obama as DNC chair. And I just think, come on. Don't be very careful of distractions in terms of, I mean, and I'm speaking to myself as well.
Right.
Be very careful of distractions in terms of people trying to suck you into proxy wars for things that don't matter anymore.
Right.
And this, look at where Bernie Sanders is now. Bernie Sanders spoke at a rally today in D.C. about Donald Trump, about holding him accountable, about anti-racism, about anti-Semitism. And you know, you can be mad at Bernie Sanders. You can say it's all the Democratic Party's fault that Bernie Sanders wasn't the nominee, which I think is naive, but however, anything that you want to talk about with me that takes us backwards in time, forget it. Not interested.
Yeah. No.
And having a proxy war at the DNC chair level over we need to take over the quote unquote Democratic Party at the top by having a DNC chair who may not be qualified to do that job. That job description is pretty short.
Yeah.
You have to have contacts, you have to have fundraising chops, you have to know what state house districts are in each 50 states in the union and how to win them, which is boring and non-glamorous. It's not a glamorous job. Think about Reince Priebus and how much everybody hated him. Think of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and how much everybody hated her. It is not a job for someone who currently sits in the House of Representatives, period. It is a 90-hour a week job. You're on the phone all the time. You're busy making, lining up, and recruiting candidates from everything from state representative to president. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what, that's your job.
So if and you want to, if you want to change the Democratic Party, walk into the local party headquarters and say, how can I help?
Right. There's a great way to change the Democratic Party from the inside out. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. On the other, and you know, my daughters are 12 and 14 and they're talking Kanye 2020.
Right.
Slight, and even they are slightly tongue in cheek about that. Okay.
Right.
But we need people that know what they're doing in these offices.
Yeah.
And so just don't, I, as I say, you know, I've had battles with people this week over this DNC chair thing, which is a waste of my time. Get over the past. We're looking for people that can do the job. And, Michelle Obama's not interested.
No.
I don't even know where to go beyond that. I want you to get in now because we're already at 32 minutes. Melissa Harris Perry.
Yeah. Well, let me just round up what you just said about people are dreamcasting their dream remake of this election.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You know what? You know what'd be great in this? You know, I think I'm seeing a Seth Rogen type in this.
Ooh.
Maybe with like, I don't know, a younger Jane Fonda type. I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. No, this is not a TV show, and you can dreamcast it all you want, but you want competent, practical professionals running this party. Really, you do. And that doesn't mean
that you're not moving the party to the left, that we're not standing for positions that are to the left of Hillary Clinton in lots and lots of ways. I'm not suggesting that. You know how liberal I am. Hopefully by now, that's not it. But competence. If we don't have competence, we're not going to get where we need to go.
The exception is George Clooney. If you can get George Clooney to run, I'm there. I think he's busy.
Just write us
a big old check, George. We'll take money instead. That's fine too. That's perfectly okay. Melissa Harris Perry.
Yeah, Melissa Harris Perry, there is a video up at driftglass.blogspot.com. It's a long video.
It is, an hour.
Of Melissa Harris Perry speaking with three other African Americans in media. I believe they're all, are they all in media or is one an office holder? I can't remember.
One is an intern, I believe.
Okay.
And two are in media. One's a young, up and coming young lady.
Okay, great.
But they're all very, very, and they got wine and they got the whiskey out and they're in her home, I believe, just talking. And it's fascinating because really they just cut right to the nonsense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these are people who don't live who live a relatively privileged life, I guess is the right thing to say, but not they're not aloof from their community.
Right.
But these are women who have lived in the world, high, middle, and low, and they know who they are. They know where they come from. And I am treading on some very delicate ground here.
Yes, you are, because you're married to a white woman.
Well, my ex is an African-American woman who is a civil rights person and so forth, a wonderful person, but we can't be married no more.
Yeah, that happens. Yep.
And her dad was a civil rights leader, it would be fair to say, and we've known each other since we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been to Black Panther pancake breakfast and this is not a strange territory for me. And I lived in Chicago and these were a lot of the folks that I knew when I was working downtown. And so this is not a strange conversation for me to have. On the other hand, I'm a middle-aged white guy living in the suburbs. And I want to tread this very carefully and just honestly report on what they said and tell you how it affected me. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they got right down to cases, which is white women have been voting Republican since the 70s, period. Mm-hmm. This is not a surprise to anyone. Melissa Harris Perry called this a long time ago. Remember, Melissa Harris Perry was fired from MSNBC because she wouldn't go along with the program of pointing a camera at empty podiums of Donald Trump and calling it news.
Well, and she wouldn't put up with being interrupted and having her show interrupted over and over again.
For bullshit.
By sports and by rallies and by other coverage when there were things that needed, when race relations in America needed to be covered.
Right.
And this was the 1 hour that the liberal network on television was going to give to that.
Right.
And they kept taking it away.
Right. And they kept taking it away to so they could point a camera.
She was a troublemaker and she got fired. Yeah.
And she got fired. She got fired for trying to do her job.
Right.
But these were very honest women. Mm-hmm. And they said, look, white women have been voting in the majority for Republicans since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Women vote generally to support their community. They're much more communitarian in their voting, broadly speaking. In this case, it means bolstering whiteness.
I was going to say it's tribal. Yeah.
It propping up the white power structure is what they value their racial identity much more than their gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
So they will vote for a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
They'll vote for a straight up lying fascist scumbag who probably reminds them of their first husband.
Or their current husband. Even Keith Olbermann has called that out. You know, how bad a man do you have as your dad to think Trump is a good leader? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it's just this is what my white gated community wants, and this is how I support them.
Mm-hmm.
They also had very unkind words for the 10% of or so of black men who flipped during this election because of straight up misogyny.
Yep.
Because I ain't voting for a woman. Period. I don't care who the fuck they run. I'm not voting for a woman. Period. They also felt real bad about white progressive women because white progressive women keep thinking they're the majority and they're not.
They're not.
And they said, you know what? You want to prove up? Because they said over and over again, you know, I'm surrounded by really nice people who are white, all kinds of different people. So I'm not, you know, talking about them. However, if you want to prove up, donate money to causes that actually help people who need it most.
Yep.
The people who are actually threatened. For you, this is horrible. This is a disaster. But there are some communities for whom this is an existential threat right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is, as they said, this is not a dress rehearsal. If you are an immigrant family, if you are an LGBT family, if you are a family of color, this is an imminent threat. And children are going to bed crying at night, terrified. Yes. They're going to be torn away from their parents, and with good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time for you to take your safety pin, which is important, and back it up with some cold, hard cash given to causes that support those communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they jumped up in Joe Biden's face a little bit.
Mm.
But for a really good reason, because they talked a lot about how this might have been avoided if we had an actual primary. But Deval Patrick sat this one out. Cory Booker sat this one out. You know, that the greatest thing to happen to the Democratic Party in 2008 was an actual fight between a continent-wide fight between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. It made them both better candidates, but it also took the Democratic message to Louisiana and Mississippi and North Carolina and places that nobody ever heard it before, and activated people in those places. This election, way too many first-tier Democrats sat it out. And that was a bad idea. And one person said, well, Joe Biden, you know, his son died. And Melissa Harris Perry, who'd had a little bit to drink, jumped right and said, I don't give a shit. You know, yes, it was very sad. What happened to Beau Biden was very sad. And I love Joe Biden. But you know what? All the black women whose children have been murdered had been in my house the day after or 2 days after working on solving the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about who is allowed to grieve and for how long.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden is allowed to feel, you know, it's been terrible. First of all, your son had the best medical care available. He was in hospice. Your family never had to worry about money. And she says, you know what? Ida B. Wells had nothing. Nothing. And she did great work. So I'm really sorry, Joe. And that was unfortunate. And maybe you would have been a terrible candidate or whatever. But there are people out there who've actually lost family members to police violence who get right in the fight the next day or the next week because they live in a community where that happens a lot. And they grieve, but they then jump back into the fight to try to fix it. And I thought that was a really that was an exemplary observation.
Yeah.
It's not one I would have ever made. Because I'm not wired to think that way, and they are, and God bless them, and that's why I shut up and listen to the whole thing. They also took on time series polling, which is asking the same question of the same group over a long period of time. And if you did that, which a lot of people did, you would notice over time that nothing changed, because the Trump voter, it didn't matter what you told them, they weren't going to change their mind. And the Clinton voter, no matter what you told them, they weren't going to change their mind. Now, some would be more active and some would be more depressed. But no matter what new information you gave them, they weren't changing over the course of time. However, the number of Trump voters might have gone up slightly or somewhat, and the number of Clinton voters gone down net-net because of being depressed, because of WikiLeaks and because of Russian tampering and because of election and because of James Comey deciding to stick his hand in the middle of it. So they ended with, first of all, don't sleep on the midterms. Midterms is where you win elections. Local elections are where you win, and get out there and get back into the fight at the local level. That's where you redistrict. That's where you rebuild. That's where you can have some direct effect. Second, don't buy the – and I've heard this from two or three sources. Do not buy the bullshit that the DNC needs to work harder to cater to the feelings of the white working class.
Yep.
Bullshit. I'm sorry, but the white working class needs to get the fuck over it. I'm white. I'm working class, but I'm not stupid enough to vote for a fascist. If you
are class, I'm gonna halt you right there, because there was a conversation about this on Twitter yesterday. There is no white working class.
No,
there really isn't.
As a demographic thing, no, there isn't.
No, there isn't. The white income compared to the black income compared to the Hispanic income, it's just not even worth talking about.
Right.
There is a white underclass that is uneducated and is poor.
Yep.
That might vote Republican, but is always going to vote Republican because guns and because they're stupid.
And because abortion.
Yeah, and I want to get into that after you finish talking about Melissa Harris Perry, because that's not it is not a coincidence that white women have been voting Republican since the early 70s. And I didn't listen to the whole thing, but you said that they did not mention abortion in this video, correct?
No, right.
Okay. All right. We'll get to that. Go ahead and finish up.
Well, it was don't buy the bullshit. Don't buy the hype. Yeah. I've seen a million articles on, we have to find out what they feel. Well, we know what they feel. If you're a liberal, you really do know what they feel.
And go spend 3 minutes in the Breitbart comment section and you'll know what they feel.
Well, again, if you want – this is where – and this is going back many, many, many podcasts, and we've said this many times before. If you want to know what a liberal thinks, ask a liberal.
Yeah.
If you want to know what a conservative thinks, ask a liberal.
Yeah.
Because these people have been listening to out on their tractors and in their cars and on their way to work and at home. They've been letting Rush Limbaugh take a shit in their skulls for 25 years. And it is a fact of life that there is a large, large number of people out there who are irredeemably lost in this shit pile of right-wing propaganda and never want to get out of it. Because the alternative would be to admit that they are exactly as big a lying, racist chump as liberals have always been. There's no place for them to go but deeper. So, again, and we have been listening to this for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And liberals have been warning about this for 25 years and nobody listened because it's a scary story. So if you want to know what the right thinks, ask someone who's been on the outside looking in for 25 years. And that's us. So don't cater to that nonsense. Have great economic policies. Have sound economic policies. Have good worker retraining and economic sectoral focuses and spend your money wisely and have an infrastructure project. All those things will benefit everyone. But quit trying to think that you're going to lure people who are deeply committed to horrible ideas out into the light at this stage in their life. That's never going to happen. And the DNC needs to reward those who have been loyal
and shown up
and marched. You know who shows up? Black women show up every fucking election, and they do their
part. Knock on doors and do what needs to be done. Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a community strategy, which is shield your immigrant communities. Mm-hmm. Churches can become sanctuaries. Universities can be sanctuaries, too. Get your local church, get your local mosque, get your local university to say, I'm sorry, you're not coming in here, and you're not registering anybody. You're not hauling anybody away. And if you don't like it, there's 50 of our parishioners or students out there with cell phones who would like to film you and make you famous for kicking down the door of a sanctuary and dragging a family away in the night. And that's the thing that's been different.
And by the way, all of us with cell phones, we're all registered as Muslims, too.
Yeah.
So you're taking me in.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, are you willing to go to jail?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I know Junior Dude is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've always been kind of cautious about that because I've had small children at home.
Right.
And that to me, you know, leaving them to the care of juvenile detention because mom's in jail has not been something that's been on my list. But now that they're old enough to know what's going on and can be left home at home, even for a night if they need to be.
Right.
It's sure. It's time for us to be willing to go to jail.
Right.
For this.
You
and I don't know how this is going to unfold, but if the dragnet comes and I'm not trying to romanticize this.
No,
this is real.
This is not fun.
This is not
a cartoon. It's not an action adventure movie. And no one knows how it's going to end. But two last things to sign on, and this is appropriate to mention at this juncture, the reassurance that we will bounce back faster than ever because previous generations had nothing to work with. Ida B. Wells had nothing to work with, and they did amazing things. We have institutional support. We have resources. We have history. We have committed young people. We have demographics and the trends of time on our side. Mm-hmm. Plus, Republicans are fuck ups. They're going to screw up everything they touch. They're doing it right now.
So much for coal country.
even
McConnell says no.
Yeah.
Even Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, who doesn't have to face re-election for another 6 years, you know, another 4.5 years, is saying, no, you know, we're not going to be able to do that. Because why? Because the fracking interests are now stronger than the coal interests.
Right.
And there's no market for coal anymore because it's too expensive.
And we have to be there at the moment that turns, the moment when it's like, oh, we never promised you a wall. We have to be there in some strength. To shove a bone down the throat of that argument, say, wait a minute.
You're gaslighting us. Yeah, and pretending it didn't happen.
We're not going to put up with this one more time. You did this with the goddamn Tea Party. You did it with the Bush administration. You did it with the Clinton administration. You just wiped everyone's memory and pretended the last 18 months or 8 years or whatever it was never happened. And they're going to try it again, and we have to be ready for it. Finally, the former MSNBC host advises, turn off your cable television.
Yeah.
They lied to you. They continue to lie to you. They pair up usually very competent women of color who are Rhodes Scholars or very bright with ridiculous men and make you think that's normal.
Think that's both sides.
That's the way it's supposed to be. They pair up competent, qualified, capable, articulate people with assholes and clowns and lunatics and say, well, that's just the news. That's just both sides. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to be. They prime you to accept that one side, it's okay for one side to be completely out of its fucking mind because that side's always given half the table.
Right.
Turn off your cable television and support your local podcast. She didn't say that, but I'm saying that. Now, back to
Well, and I did want to say, just as an example, even Fareed Zakaria, GPS this weekend, when they needed to have a Trump supporter on against the editor of The New Yorker, who is a white guy as well. But they had on a guy named Conrad Black, yeah, who is not allowed to be in this country because of securities fraud. He's in Canada. He's been deported to Canada, which is his native country.
Uh-huh.
But he has been deported and banned from the United States for 30 years because of securities fraud. And Fareed Zakaria didn't mention that.
No, why would
on the air? So CNN is a toilet.
Yeah.
And you know, this Corey Lewandowski never worked for us, right? I mean,
well,
we're almost
happened.
At that point now, right? We are almost at that point. It is that bad. And yes, the cable news DC press corps is already normalizing Trump. and talking about the revolving door at Trump Tower. I mean, I heard this on MSNBC this morning. The revolving door at Trump Tower is going to be spinning really fast with all these people coming in for interviews for jobs.
Ooh,
yay, yay, yay.
So exciting. You know,
and it is a village of company town,
right,
where the reporters are there to simply feed the beast. And you aren't going to hear one more word from anybody about investigating Hillary Clinton.
Nope.
For emails, not for private servers, not for Benghazi. You'll never hear that word again.
Nope.
It never happened.
And you'll never hear people talking about, let's have some hearings on the Bush administration's Benghazis.
I just want a hearing on Jason Chaffetz and the FBI director and what get his emails out here.
Well, that's what a lame duck session is for.
Yeah. That's what a liberal would say.
That's what a lame duck session is for. But
all right, I've got two. Go ahead.
Please, no. I was going to say that. Look, let's roll, baby.
Two things to sum up with, because we're almost at an hour.
Yes, we are.
And we're not ready to do Science Fiction University yet. We will do it when we're ready to do it.
Sorry.
It's the thing. Right now, I'm grateful to get through this podcast, and I'm grateful to talk to you, Dirk Glass, and to hear from all our listeners, and just know that we love you. Barack Obama was at a conference call with supporters on November 14th. And someone took some notes and posted them to Twitter, and here they are. Your president feels your pain. Surprising losses are worse than the ones you see coming. This is all from President Obama's conference call, him saying these things. Progress doesn't always follow a straight line. And then he says to his supporters and his followers, I'm giving you a whole week and a half to get over this.
Yeah.
Come Thanksgiving, it's time to stop moping and get organizing. And that's something I know a little bit about. I, President Obama, am constrained in what I can do until I'm a private citizen.
Uh-huh.
But come February, maybe a little later after a vacation, Michelle and I will be right there with you. In the meantime, stay involved locally. And I was so grateful to hear from you today, Driftglass, that AFSCME is on every street corner in Springfield today.
They're not putting up with the Governor Hedge Fund. Bullshit.
Yeah.
No.
Yep. Nope. Yep. And finally, I'm still fired up and I'm still ready to go.
Yep.
So, and so are we. We're not quitting this podcast. You kidding me?
No.
This is therapy for us, first of all. An opportunity to share what we need to do going forward. And, we'll be sharing that. Junior Dude has come up with all kinds of ideas, on how he can work to make this world a better place. He may not become president of the United States. He's thinking that.
No.
He's
no.
thinking he might work on the environment.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can absolutely imagine.
I can absolutely imagine that. And he says he wants to give speeches. He said, you know, I'm a good public speaker.
Yes,
and
he is.
I said, you are.
Yes, he is.
And that's pretty remarkable coming from a kid who, at age 3, was diagnosed with high-functioning autism, and we didn't know how much he was going to talk and whether we'd ever have conversation. I remember his dad and I having agonizing concerns about, will we have conversation? He does say words, but will we have conversation?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he is now saying, I'm a good speech. I can give speeches and I can speak passionately about things.
Well,
and
if I may suggest, you should just give Michelle Obama speeches, because everybody's doing it.
Yeah. I want to end, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about this, Driftglass.
Sure.
We've gotten a couple of letters from people who are about to embark on a Thanksgiving.
Yes.
That is not happy.
No.
And you and I are...
Blessed.
Blessed, right. But we, you know, it is first Thanksgiving without my mom around, and I never went to Thanksgiving at her house for all kinds of reasons. I mean... My relationship with my mom was friendly and cordial, but not physically close. We didn't see each other a lot.
Uh-huh.
She simply did not travel. She was a bit of a hermit. She
right.
just She was never there for any of the births of any of my children. She just didn't leave her house. So, and I loved her, and we, you know, loved each other so, from where we were. So I don't have this sort of agony that a lot of people who've lost their moms have of, I'm going to be at Thanksgiving dinner and my mom's not going to be there. My mom never was there. So I don't have that sort of, the holidays are not going to be hard for me in that way.
Right.
People that are going to a Thanksgiving dinner where there are Trump voters, I don't know how you're going to do that. And several people have said, have written to us about that, and asked, you know, what to do or asked, just wanted to vent, you know, this is where I am.
Uh-huh.
This is where I am with my family. And the only thing I want to say to everybody who's in that situation is, because I've been in situations where I've been, emotionally abused. And I mean that quite literally.
Uh-huh.
You do not have to be emotionally abused.
No, you're not obliged.
And I don't know if it helps for you to hear that from a person you don't know face to face and you only listen to her podcast, but I'll say it again. No one deserves to be emotionally abused.
Nope.
Over politics, over how clean the house is, right. Over anything.
Right.
Don't deserve it. So that's pretty much all I have to say. Do you have anything to say about that?
Just the obvious, which is drink heavily and just wait for your moment. Wait for your moment because it'll come.
I did tell one friend to focus on the children there.
Yeah.
You know, there are coping strategies with family and holidays that have nothing to do with being emotionally abused. It's just sometimes it's just an emotional train wreck to go and see your parents or to see your grandparents or whatever. And that's, you know, entirely separate from that. Focus on football, bring coloring pages, bring Christmas cards, you know, start filling out your Christmas cards, start making your Christmas list with people. You know, there are things you can do to cope.
Yeah.
And that sometimes that's as much as you can hope for.
There's, you know, my general rule of thumb, which I violate quite often. Let me just be clear about that. Especially when I was going through my divorce, was don't do anything right now that I will regret in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say anything. Don't react in any way. Don't, you know, as, you know, when you get that little tingle up your spine and you can feel anger just rising up.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, I give into that every now and then. But I had a father who was real bad at anger management. My goal as a stepfather, for example, is to not be like that. He had many other fine qualities that I celebrate and I try to emulate. But there were a whole lot of flaws there. And my goal is just to do no harm. So my rule generally is, am I going to really regret this? Am I going to change anyone's mind? Am I going to alter the course of my family's history? And the answer is probably no. But that doesn't mean you are a footstool or a doormat for anyone. If you're being emotionally abused, excuse yourself politely. Say, can we have a moment of silent prayer? Because that always shuts people up. and pray, you know, Lord, you know, please show these sinners the error of their way. Pick out a nice verse if you do that sort of thing. Just, you know, give thanks for the day. Give thanks for the family. Try not to kill anyone. But you might try, if someone just won't shut up, you might try a little jujitsu, which is, well, I can understand why you're celebrating. You guys won after, you know, not the vote, mind you, but you guys won. Let me ask you a question, and let me write it down on a piece of paper right now so that next year we can take it out and look at it and see where we stand. If your president breaks every fucking promise to you that he gave to you as a promissory note to earn your vote, what will you do? What will happen? What if it turns out liberals were right about Donald Trump all along? What if you are a Trump? What if he does say, fuck the wall, schwall, schmall, we'll put up a fence, it'll be great. You know what? We're going to get rid of Medicare because that'll make Paul Ryan happy. And you know what? Deficits, schmeficit. Nobody cares about deficits. Let's just blow through another few trillion dollars on a couple of projects I have in mind. And half of his staff go to jail. and on and on and on and on. What happens? At what point? What's your tipping point? I'm just curious. At what point do you say I was wrong? And let's write that down right now, so that a year from now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this guy's the greatest president since Eisenhower. You know, maybe he is, but maybe he's not. And so let's all agree that a year from now, we'll take out this piece of paper and look at it, and we'll see if he's gone past the point where you promised that you would admit in front of everybody here at this table that you were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, right? You're a grown-up, right? You can admit you're wrong when you're wrong, right?
Well, except that I think there's a number of people out there in Trump land for whom the only promise that Donald Trump needed to make them happy is he's not Barack Obama.
Right. That's right.
And he's going to keep on being not Barack Obama. So
he'll be the best not Barack Obama we've ever had.
Well, and they asked people at the Republican convention. These are people who hardcore paid to go to Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump. These are people that are really there putting their money and their time and their effort into being Republicans. You know, so what does it mean to be a Republican? What does it mean? You know, what does Donald Trump stand for?
Ah.
Well, he hates Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And that's it.
So a year from now, and I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm not even saying you should do it, but consider it not as an aggressive, you know, obnoxious thing to do, but a year from now. Okay. Mm-hmm. You clearly didn't care about deficits. You didn't care about email, really, because, you know, Mike Pence has email problems. You don't care about that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't care about corruption, because here's a list of all the people that Donald Trump has had in his administration who are now in jail. You didn't care about that. You didn't care about foreign entanglement. Here's the two wars that he started or nearly started that you didn't care about. So all the issues that you told us a year ago drove your decision weren't really what you cared about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take away foreign policy, domestic policy, economic policy, executive corruption, etc., all you have left is race and gender. You're a racist. The reason you love Donald Trump is
now,
because
there you've just ruined Thanksgiving.
I've ruined next Thanksgiving. Not this one. Let's subtract out all of the factors that you actually never.
Well, but you have to factor in all of this. I mean, you are now running a movie of a script of.
Oh, yeah.
You being the hero of the story that you get everything right.
Right.
And the deal is that your mom or your aunt or your grandma who spent all day cooking and just
let's not
wants
talk
to have
about
a nice
this.
Thanksgiving,
let's
right?
Not talk
and
about
let's
this.
Make pancakes in the morning
right.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And has to live with Crazy Uncle Liberty next week. And you get to go home next week.
Sure.
You know, I have compassion for that woman up to a point, except you know, she voted for Trump too, right?
Of course she did.
So there's that. But, you know, this is fraught with.
It is. It is. And
this is an issue. But like you said, I think you prefaced all of that with if they won't drop it.
Right.
Right.
It won't. If they won't.
If they won't drop it. So I would start with, you know, you voted for Trump. Why did you vote for Trump? Well, he's going to build a wall. Okay. And you write that down. Okay. And what else? And he's going to make America great again. What does that mean? Well, he's a businessman. He's going to make the economy better. Okay. I'm going to write that down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and ask them, do you think that the deficit is too high right now? You know, Obama's still president right this minute. Is the deficit too high right this minute?
Is that a priority? Is that important?
Is that a priority? Well, okay, I'm going to write that down. And then have them read it over and sign it.
Right. Right.
And say, I'm going to save this. I'm going to bring it up next year and the year after that. And we will see. You know, I hope you're right and I'm wrong. I hope that deficits stay low and Donald Trump fulfills his promises as he sees fit. I don't agree with the wall. I'm going to fight him on that. But sure, I hope Mexico pays for it.
Uh-huh.
You know, let's see what happens.
Right.
And now we've had our political discussion.
Let's watch football.
And you fold this up and you put it in your pocket until next year.
You frame
and
it.
You're done.
You frame
and
it.
And you frame it.
And that's next year's Christmas present. Hey, Uncle, remember all that shit you said a year ago?
I got your signature right here. I think it's a fantasy, Drew.
It is. It is.
But at the same time, You know, I really feel for people who have family members who are in that in that situation where there's so much to deal with. I have a cousin who I think is a Republican, actually, but I always admired his remedy for a lot of things, which is the power of away from.
Right. There's a lot of joy to be found in the power of away
from. Yeah, in the power of away from. And if you sit in the kids' room with the kids and talk to the kids about school and about coloring and what they want for Christmas,
you'll be fine.
Then, you know, you could have a good Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. And or if you sit with Joe, instead of Crazy Uncle Liberty, you sit with Joe and get into a real intense conversation about those Cubs. Wasn't that amazing? And then talk about football. And you're, you know, off to the races. Crazy Uncle Liberty comes in and I'm sorry, we're talking about football right now. We're not talking about making America great again. Making America great again is football. Then you survive it. Sometimes you're just going to survive Thanksgiving with your family.
And sometimes that's the important thing.
That's the important thing.
Get through with your dignity intact. But again, you don't have to be anyone's doormat. You can get up and walk away.
No. And if you are at a table with a family full of paralyzed, sad, grieving Hillary supporters, tell them about the Professional Left podcast.
Sure. Hey, look.
And give them hugs.
Yeah.
And perhaps share with them what Obama said. Fired up. He's still fired up and ready to go. Yeah. And when he's a private citizen, he knows a little something about community organizing.
And remind them there's 62 million people in this country who feel just like they do.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Not alone. You'll never walk alone.
Not alone. You're not alone.
All right, let's wind this thing up because, you know, people are coming home soon.
That's a wonderful place to end.
Yeah.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website, Internet Kitties sent in by you, the listener. This week's Internet Kitties are Knight and Finch.
Uh-huh.
One weighs about twice as much as the other one, but the little one is an alpha.
Oh, I see.
And just bosses the other one around. Yeah. So go visit Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, and Finch at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, or at our Facebook page. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are suddenly deeply interested in this electoral college thingy.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey, dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.